Finally, I pulled him back and stood up and ordered him to crawl to the bed and now. Oh, there are so many other games, tasks, tests, things that we might do. But I'm hungry for that cock, I said. I must have it, and what I must have is what must be done. Now up on your knees and rip this dress from me, rip every stitch of it off now with your teeth, hands behind your neck. You dare move your hands and I'll whip your ankles and the soles of your feet. Hurry. In a frenzy, he obeyed, ripping off my jeweled belt and tearing the brocade wide open and dragging it from my arms till the tatters lay in a shining puddle at my feet. Ah, so much for that expensive Venetian fabric, but I would treasure these rags forever. Now look at me. He did, though it was quite obvious that he might have preferred to look at my sex instead of at my face. He turned his large brown eyes up obediently. We remained still, him on his knees and me naked in my satin slippers, staring at one another, and his eyes seemed filled with curiosity and awe. You're so beautiful, Your Majesty, I said. A short, muffled laugh escaped his lips.
You think so, Lady Eva? He whispered.
I took his face in both my hands, pressing his cheeks with my thumbs. I bent to kiss him hard on the mouth, but then a wild idea came to me. I glanced at the nearby table. There stood a silver pitcher and a goblet and several linen serviettes. I could smell the wine. Open your mouth, I said. He hesitated, but when I slapped him hard, he obeyed. I filled the goblet, swirling the red wine for a moment to look at it in the light, and then I put it before his lips. Now when I fill your mouth, you will not close it, do you hear me? I poured the wine on his tongue, and he trembled all over trying to swallow without closing his lips as I'd commanded, the wine slipping down the sides of his face and down his chin. But he managed to obey, gasping and struggling. I poured wine onto one of the serviettes now and began to clean his teeth vigorously with it. Again, he gasped and he trembled. This had clearly never been done to him before. And as I worked away on his back teeth, he groaned, unable to help himself. I held his head firmly with my left hand, almost cruelly, as I worked away polishing every tooth in his mouth, his lips trembling violently. Then I lifted the goblet. Spit in here now, I commanded. He struggled to obey, spitting out what little wine had been left, pressing his lips together frantically suddenly. I slapped him hard again. Open your mouth wide, I said. I never told you that you could close it. It seemed he was moaning for mercy. I kissed his teeth, ran my tongue along the upper teeth and then the lower. I touched his tongue with my tongue. Again he gasped, as if keeping his mouth open took all his will, and I imagine that it did. Close your lips, I said, and I laid mine against his as he did so. The tears were sliding down his cheeks. A long, shuddering sigh came from him. He kissed me back, hungrily, almost desperately. His cock was again dancing wildly. I had never seen a more powerful shaft, a more deeply colored shaft, and he struggled, obviously, to keep it back away from me. Just for a second, his hands went loose from his neck, but then he remembered himself and put them back into place. I pretended I hadn't seen it. I went quickly to my casket on the sideboard and removed a pot of scented cream and came back to him, opening the little glass pot and then setting it on the bedside table. I took a lovely dollop of the cream in the palm of my hand. This was a sweet salve that I'd blended myself with the scent of apricots and sunshine in it, and bits of ground rose petals. Stand, I said. I worked the cream all over my hands. At once he obeyed, as limber as a boy. I smoothed the thick, oily emollient over his enormous scrotum and then his cock, watching him twitch and suffer. He could not hide the trembling now. The tip of his cock glistened beautifully, and a thick drop of his own fluid hovered there at the tiny mouth. I was careful not to touch it, not to push him over the edge. I smiled, wiped my hands on a small linen towel for which I was most grateful, and then stared again into his brown eyes. They fixed on me and were wet and shining with tears. "Now into bed," I said. I climbed up on the bed myself, still wearing my slippers, digging into the burgundy coverlet with my heels, and he came after me and over me, a perfect giant of a man. "Into me now and hard, and you drive it hard, hard with all your strength, and you come when I come and not one second before, you hear me?" Without answering, he thrust that enormous cock against me like a battering ram. How in the world can that find the little door, I thought, with the most exhilarating happiness. But he found it. He ground into it and opened it, parting the dripping wet lips and slamming deep till his belly was against me. My eyes had closed. I opened them and found myself looking up into his face, into his eyes. Again and again he slammed against me, stretching me, filling me, his arms like pillars beside me, his hair hanging down in his face. I felt the cock fill me up tight, tighter perhaps than I'd ever been filled. Oh, what cock in the world would ever match this cock, sliding against my clitoris? I started crying out. I couldn't stop myself. I wrapped my naked legs tight around him and drove my hands down into the crack of his backside, my first fingers left and right plunging into his anus. I would have held off for an hour, letting my passion rise and fall, but I couldn't control it. I couldn't. I was writhing against the coverlet, trying to control it, riding up with him, slammed down again by him, struggling to bite down against it. But it was useless. My face was burning. All breath had gone out of me. I was nothing and no one. It was a fire rolling upwards, consuming me as I started to come, lifting my hips, crying out, and he let me lift my hips, then forced me down again one final time, coming inside me in one swift glory of jerking movements. It went on, and finally it was I who cried out, "No more!" He drew back, and unbidden, he closed his mouth over mine and kissed me. He drove his tongue deep into me. "Away, stop!" I sighed. I groaned. No one would call that speaking words. He fell down right beside me with a long, deep sigh and then rolled over on his back. I saw his eyes close. For a long moment, we lay still. Then I was up and on my feet and inspecting the utter ruin of my garments. I gathered them up as best I could. I stared down at him. It seemed he was falling into a deep sleep, and on a chair on the far side of the bed, I could see what appeared to be a long robe of red velvet. Surely this was his robe, his dressing gown. He'd been dressed in red when we'd gathered in the great hall. It was his color, red, red trimmed with gold, as this robe was. I put my paddle and strap back in the casket, along with the pot of cream, and stuffed my torn dress inside it, and closed it, and held it. "Wake up now," I said. He opened his eyes and looked at me. He had a vague, heavy, sleepy look. "Get up, put on that red dressing gown and slippers if you have them, and take this coverlet off the bed. Wrap me in it as I am naked and without clothes, and carry me back to my chamber." He obeyed without a moment's hesitation. The moment he closed the long robe around his tall frame, he was every inch the king again, and as he gathered up the coverlet, he had an easy, graceful air to him, as if such a task were nothing. He held it up for me as if it were a cloak, and as I turned my back to him, he wrapped me into it securely, and then picked me up as if I were weightless, a light little thing with a casket in her arms. And indeed I was, suddenly cradled in his arms and staring up at his smiling face. He carried me out of the bedchamber, easily opening the door and shoving it back behind us, and then down the long, shadowy corridor. No one was about. If others peeped from recesses in the dark, through keyholes or tiny apertures made for peeping, we didn't know it. And all the while, He was smiling down at me. Smiling. This is my door, I said when we had reached my chamber. Set me down on my feet. He obeyed, and then he opened the door for me. A gust of sweet warm air came from my little parlor. I'm dismissing you now, sire, I said in a low, confidential voice. With your permission.
Will you grant me one last kiss?
He whispered, and this time his smile was radiant and infectious. As you wish, I said. He clamped his hands on the sides of my face and held me captive as he kissed me with as much passion as he had ever kissed me earlier.
My precious Lady Eva, he whispered.
And with that, he turned and walked down the hall without so much as a glance behind him. Such a stately figure with such a sprightly step. I rushed into my chambers, shut the door, and collapsed at my writing table.
Chapter 5 Prince Alexei, Beloved Queen, Beloved Slave.
You are to go at once to the North Tower. You will see an open door at the top of the stairs. The Queen will be waiting there for you. The page who delivered that message left immediately, and I hesitated only long enough to comb my hair, eat a slice of ripe apple to freshen my breath, and make certain my attire was as it should be. Then I was off, hurrying through the castle, finding the winding stairs of the North Tower easily enough, and rushing up towards the open door and its promise. I don't know that I quite believed it until I was inside the room, and the Queen stood before me, her large blue eyes as innocent and enchanting as they had been decades ago when we'd first coupled in a little servant's room near the old Queen's bedchamber. She stood staring at me, dressed only in a long, full cloak of black velvet, her lovely blonde hair loose over her shoulders. She seemed not a day older than she had been in the long-ago time. "Close the door, Prince," she said, "and please bolt it." At once I obeyed. She had moved to the fireplace and stood with one hand on the heavy stone mantel, looking down into the flames. To the far right stood a huge bed of dark oak with a paneled ceiling atop its intricately turned posts. It seemed the red brocade coverlet was sewn with hundreds of tiny twinkling jewels and bits of gold and silver. Chased silver vessels glinted in the half-light on the sideboard, and tapestries enclosed us, of men and women in the royal hunt, looking upon us with gentle, ever-vigilant eyes. "My king and I have decided to use this night to ascertain all we need to know for tomorrow's decision," Beauty said, her eyes still on the fire. I drew closer to her. I marveled at the sheen of her hair in the light of the fire and the dewy freshness of her cheeks. It seemed an agony suddenly to be so near her, and so alone with her. Why was she subjecting me to such a trial? I trusted she had her purposes. "I understand, Your Majesty," I said. "What can I tell you? What questions might I answer?" "You can take off your clothes and lay them on that table there," she said. She turned and looked at me. I was petrified. I couldn't find words for what I felt. My flesh was responding to her words as if I had no control over it. No control over desire whatsoever. I was speechless. "Prince Alexei," she said, "don't be so foolish. Do you think I would bring you here without my lord's permission? Do you think I would expose you to his wrath? You are a guest under my roof. What happens in any chamber of this house tonight happens with King Laurent's blessing." "Yes, Your Majesty," I said. I couldn't conceal my relief, or that I was trembling. Quickly, I stripped off all my clothes, my velvet tunic, leggings, everything, and laid all on the table as she had directed me. I felt the warm air moving over my naked skin, and it seemed a riot of memories came back to me. Memories of beauty and me. Memories of the kingdom too numerous to assemble in any conceivable order. I felt my face flushed and hot, and with a mind of its own, my cock was hardening. Oh, it was too like the old days. to be naked once more and not hide the subtle and merciless transformation of one's own body. To be exposed and yet to be free, strangely, wondrously free. I turned slowly to face her. She had opened her black velvet cloak. She was naked. Her nipples were pink, girlishly pink as they had been long ago, and the golden hair between her legs was gleaming in the firelight. Her soft, flat, rounded belly was as beautiful as her smooth thighs. I had always loved her rounded little belly, hard and flat yet part of her voluptuous little body, rounded as were her thighs and her delectable arms. She was a creature of curves and dimples, of wondrously shaped wrists and ankles. My cock was now fully hard. I had no hope of concealing it or commanding it. "You are my queen," I said. I couldn't help myself, but I wondered if she knew the weight carried by these words. Of course. She had to know. We had both been slaves of Queen Eleanor when I had stolen Beauty from the sleeping queen's closet and brought her to a safe refuge where we could make love together. There I told her the tale myself, of how I'd been captured, stripped, brought helplessly to the kingdom, and how I'd been broken by Queen Eleanor through harsh service in the kitchen of the castle for my rebellion. I told her how I won Queen Eleanor's favor through the most abject of service, and Beauty had known I was the queen's favorite. "Ah, yes, I am your queen now," she said, coming towards me. "But we were lovers in that long-ago time when we met. We made a bower together of a servant's straw bed, as I remember. A little cell became our royal chamber, and I gave myself to you with triumphant abandon. How I loved it! And we will be lovers here again tonight. That is my wish and my command. You are as beautiful, Prince, as you were then. Your hair such a color, almost red, and then brown, and so thick, so soft." She reached out to touch it. "And your eyes, your dark eyes, as wondering and almost sad as they were then." She was scarcely 6 inches from me. She looked at my erect organ. I could feel her gaze, feel a subtle heat coming from her, and I saw the blush in her cheeks. She looked into my eyes again. "I love men with dark brown eyes," she said dreamily. She reached towards my cock, but she didn't touch it. I looked down and could see the beads of moisture on the head of it. I felt such a bolt of desire. At the slightest provocation, I might come. I wondered if she had any idea what it felt like to be at the mercy of this cock. If she could even guess what it meant for my mind to be emptied now of all will or sense. What did women feel? What did those little wet hidden pockets really feel? After all these years, these insane ruminations possessed me even when I felt I wasn't actually thinking anymore. I was hard, and I was aware. I didn't know what to say or do, except to remain standing there waiting for her. A sweet floral perfume rose from her. I stared at her nipples, at the pale pink aureolas around them. I wanted to touch them, clasp them, pinch them, take her in my arms. She reached up for the gold ribbon at her throat and opened the fragile knot there, the heavy black cloak falling away from her to a puddle of shadow around her naked feet. "Come to me," she whispered as she opened her arms. I embraced her tightly, my sex tortured against her smooth flesh. Her mouth opened and I kissed her hungrily, desperately. "Beauty, my precious, unforgettable Beauty," I whispered. "Oh, I have been haunted by you so long, my sweet. If only you knew." I was breathing these words, not really speaking them, kissing her hair now, kissing her cheeks, her eyes. All the cruel moments of the old kingdom came back to me. The moment when I'd been told Beauty was gone, condemned to the village, beyond my reach, beyond hope of another night of secret lovemaking. Ah, the anguish of that I wanted never to know again. Suddenly I took her breasts cruelly in my hands, cupping them and lifting them, and I sucked at her right nipple. She was mine now, once again, here, and I did not care really what happened. I had to possess her. A low, muffled cry came from her. "Alexei," she said. I felt her tumbling towards me, weightless and without will, a bundle of fragrant, delicious limbs of moist lips and tangling hair. I gathered her up in my arms and moved towards the bed. I reached to remove the coverlet. "No, my love, no. Press me down on it, rough as it is, on all those tiny little jewels. I want to feel them against my bottom and my back." I laid her down with her head on the pillow, her shining hair a tousled nest beneath her. Her sex was ripe and beautiful as she stretched her legs, the secret lips wet and gleaming in the light of the fire, like a secret rose in a wreath of golden hair. "That's it," she said, reaching out for me. I bent over and kissed her belly, and kissed the curling, secretive hair, my tongue darting at her nether mouth, licking at it, licking at the petals of the deep, dark, blood-red rose. "No. Come up in my arms," she said. "I want your cock inside of me. Don't tease me with your tongue." I obeyed, straddling her on my knees. This first time must be quick for both of us. I could hold back no longer. I slid my cock into her, feeling the little mouth clamp down on it hungrily, and the world was nothing but fire. My whole cock was sheathed with her flesh. I could feel her throbbing against me even as she tugged at me with her arms, even as her lips rose to kiss me, her eyes closed, a low moan coming from her as subtle as her perfume. She writhed against the coverlet, twisting and turning on a bed of twinkling stars. I clamped my mouth to her lips and rode her hard, thrusting wildly, uncontrollably, slamming against her as freely as if she were a tavern maid or anyone I had ever utterly possessed. Her face went blood-red beneath me, her eyes fluttering, her mouth slack as though she were losing consciousness. And then the sheath that held my cock tightened against it in one clamping spasm after another. "Beauty!" I cried out. I could hold back no longer. I shot the fire into her, bucking over and over again. As always, time stopped, and the ecstasy seemed to go on forever, to have lifted me forever out of time and out of reason. And then it was finished, and I lay breathless and damp all over and quiet beside her. Now I felt the prickling of this bed of jewels. Now I felt it biting into my skin, and I didn't care. "How long will this last?" I thought. "She's made a boy out of me, taken me right back down to the boy I was for the old queen, ever hard, ever ready to please, ever ready to do her will, and never able to resist her." Yet I thought about Laurent, not the mighty King Laurent, but the slave Laurent, the great and legendary slave of long ago. I remembered him vividly. He'd been at the castle as long as I had before he ran away and was sent to the village. All marveled at his height, his strength, the thickness of his organ and his perfectly proportioned face and devilish smile. The faces of slaves had always mattered, and his expression had been irresistible, so affectionate and generous, and yet mocking. Yes, mocking, always. What was I by comparison, a more delicate, smaller man in every single regard? So be it. Her husband she had any time she wished. Perhaps I was a spicy dish for a summer night when the regular fare, grand as it was, had grown too familiar. Well enough. I accepted it. I was too grateful now that we had had this. I turned towards her and gazed at her profile as she lay, as if dreaming, with her eyes closed. Her loose, disheveled hair was almost entirely straight. No curl or wave at all, and lovely to look at as it covered the pillow. I touched her soft pink lips with my fingers. "I loved you in that long ago time when we were together," I said. "I love you now. I loved so many who served with me." "Yes," she said with a sigh. I loved so many as well. I loved Tristan, and I loved Captain Gordon, and I loved you, yes, you. I loved the cruel innkeeper who punished me with such disdain, Mistress Jennifer Locksley. You never knew her. I loved the strange men and women of the Sultan's kingdom. I loved Lexius, the Sultan's steward who was so strict with us, and yet we were swimming in love in those times. That's why we want it to be preserved, I said. That's why we have come back to the kingdom. That's why we want to save it now. I did not tell her that I knew Lady Jennifer Locksley very well indeed now. I did not tell her how well I knew Lexius. I know, Alexei, she said. I understand. And surely you know that the decision belongs to Laurent. Oh, I might persuade him not to take the crown of Bellevalton, yes. But I could never persuade him to take it if that was not his wish. But what do you want, beauty? I want it. She sat up and turned to me, looking down on me, her hand lying on my thigh close to my cock. I want it with all my heart, she said excitedly. But I don't know that I know how to rule or command others when it comes to the old ways of pleasure slavery. I took to submission so effortlessly. I found it voluptuous. Why lie about it? But Queen Eleanor, she was a monarch carved out of ice. That's true. But she was not what you are, beauty. She had none of your mystery, your complexity. Beauty, she was... I don't want to say unkind things of her now. She was the dark heart of the kingdom. But you bring grace and wisdom to the enterprise. Besides, why would you have to command pleasure slaves yourself? I mean, of course, yes, you and your lord would be our monarchs. But you would have a realm of servants to do the commanding of slaves for you. You would have Lady Eva. You would have old Lord Gregory. You would have 100 lords and ladies at court who know how to command the slaves who serve them. You would rule over those who know how to command and those who must obey in whatever fashion pleases you. I want more, she said. She was irresistible to me in her seriousness, the deep, thoughtful expression on her face. If I'm to rule, I must be part of what I rule. I must be of the same fabric, not some lofty figurehead gazing on all with aloofness and even fear. I couldn't bear it. I think I understand. She looked girlish and innocent again, her flaxen hair falling down to veil her nipples. I want to be a true queen if we do it. I want to learn how to be as strict and demanding as the old queen. I want to see from that point of view, which I never truly grasped. You understand? That will come more easily to you, perhaps, than you know, I said. She was such a vision that I had to force myself for the moment to concentrate on the thread of her words. I wanted her crushed beneath me again, helpless and yielding. Has it come easily to you? She asked. You were such an obedient and near-perfect slave. Yes, it did come to me, the ability to command, I confessed. I found it surprising at the time, but yes, it came to me. You spoke just now of Lexius, the steward of the Sultan, brought back with you from the Sultanate by Laurent. She smiled. Oh, yes, such a beautiful man. Dark golden skin, gorgeous dark eyes, eyelashes so thick they seemed unreal. He was our grand master under the Sultan, inspecting us, instructing us, punishing us. And then Laurent made a slave out of him in a flash. Why, Laurent made a slave of Lexius in secret before we were ever rescued from the Sultanate. And then, in the hold of the ship on our return voyage, Laurent was merciless. Oh, my lord is such a devil. What did happen with Lexius when he was brought before the queen? I was gone by then, expelled into the real world. The queen accepted him, I explained. Oh, at first she balked. Slaves were not to choose her, she declared. She was to choose her slaves. How little she understood. But she accepted him soon enough, and he became her beloved plaything, as I was. He was magnificent. So stately. Tall. So languid in his smallest gestures. He submitted with such irrepressible dignity. I smiled, thinking of it, remembering the glint of the light on his dark chest, on his black hair. He adored her. But we came to have our secrets, Lexius and I. As you had with me. Yes, only with Lexius it was different. After a year, I began to play the cruel master with him in the small hours of the night while the queen slept. I knew I was still smiling. Bad things had come to pass, but not from our lovemaking. It was enslaving Lexius that taught me how to be a master, I continued. There was something in him I couldn't resist. I think it was his pride. Most of the time when I watched other slaves being punished, I was jealous of their accomplishments. I wanted to be the one punished. It tormented me. But when I watched him being punished, I wanted to be the one with the paddle or the strap in hand. You wouldn't believe how completely I mastered him. He told me once he was as afraid of me as he'd been of Laurent. He poured out his soul. And the queen never caught on? It's a long story, I said. A long and terrible story. Bad things happened. Bad news from the Sultanate, and well, eventually, Lexius actually broke the queen's heart. But how? I never knew that the queen had the heart to break. She looked at me innocently. I sat up now, facing her. I couldn't stop myself from cupping her breasts in my hands. My cock was stirring again. I bent down and kissed her nipples. I kissed the tender, pendulant underside of her left breast. I ran my tongue along the seam where her breast met her chest. Such a lovely place, where the softness and the firmness came together. Rather like the back of the thigh meeting the soft curve of the bottom. Suddenly, I had her in a firm grip and I was suckling her savagely. I could feel her yielding, feel her sweet scent rising again with the heat in her, hear her sighs. Stop. Wait. You must tell me, she insisted. She broke away. She put her finger on my lips. How did Lexius break her heart? I was burning for her, but I released her and looked into her eyes. She loved brown eyes, she said, but I loved eyes like her eyes, that were the color of the sky and the sea. If you take the reins of the kingdom, I said, you and King Laurent, I will tell you the whole story. It is an interesting story. And Lexius and I were sent away from the kingdom together by the queen and in total disgrace. In disgrace? Yes. Because I stood up for him. But again, it is a long story. But you were in the kingdom when word came that the queen had died. You've come here on behalf of the kingdom, with Lady Eva and Tristan. Yes, I came back. But that was after many years. The queen no longer cared. She forgave me and she allowed me to stay. She was indifferent to me. But I was welcomed as a courtier. I might have had a manor house like Tristan had I wanted the bother. I didn't. She always welcomed the returnees, even more happily in the last years because she relied upon their enthusiasms to fuel the kingdom's fires. And I came back because I didn't want to be any place else in this world anymore. I paused, confronting that truth clearly, yet ashamed of admitting it at the same time. I know what you mean, Alexei, she said. Believe me, I know. We knew something there that is intoxicating beyond description. Precisely. And those who've never known it, they can't possibly comprehend. Tell them what was done to us, and they shrink in horror. They have no idea what we knew. Sometimes I have to laugh at it. How little others grasped of what pleasure slavery had been. What can they know of the endless pleasures, the endless spectacle of gorgeous flesh, the endless luxury of easy naps and scented oils rubbed into sore skin, and fingers always stroking, prodding, searching, and kisses without end, and the deep, soft cleft ever ready for the cock? I broke off, blushing, but Beauty was smiling. Laurent and I have always shared that knowledge, that private, heated knowledge, shared it as we played our little games, as we came together tenderly and violently in so many configurations. But the kingdom was a world.
I know.
The kingdom became the whole world, and we became its most innocent and fortunate of inhabitants. Yes. I didn't want to be in any other place, I repeated. Beauty, the kingdom must survive. You and King Laurent must take over. Kiss me again, Prince, she said suddenly. I know Laurent better than I know anyone in the whole wide world, and I am almost certain of what he will decide. Now kiss me, and take me, and do it roughly as you can, as if we were riding through an endless night, you and I, you riding me on and on towards the bright lights of the kingdom.
Chapter 6 Laurent A New and More Perfect Vision.
It was noon before we had discussed everything to our satisfaction. Then, properly dressed in all the appropriate finery, we made our way down the stairs to the great hall, where the emissaries of Bella Valton had been waiting patiently for some time. Lady Eva looked as delectable and gorgeous as she had last night, with her lush and full breasts pressing against the dark blue velvet of her gown, the skin of her throat creamy and clear, as was her radiant face. And such red hair, such gorgeous red hair, done up now with combs and pearls, yet boldly unveiled. Oh, if only she'd ordered me to brush it last night. Oh, how delightful that would have been, to brush her long hair at her command, red hair brushed in the light of the fire. But I wasn't complaining. Last night had gone very well. I couldn't help but smile at her and wink at her as I sat down to the table, and of course this made her blush. I could still feel the cuts and welts on my backside and thighs, and I almost laughed at the secret delicious pleasure of it. A flash of her sweet voice and hands coming back to me, enough perhaps to make a satyr of me again. But there was work to be done now, and much to say. Prince Alexei and Tristan were beautifully turned out as though for a court fete, and Lady Elvira, though reserved, was her unchangeable and unchanging self, with a cold grandeur to her pale skin and her hard eyes. As for handsome blonde Captain Gordon, he was tentative and obviously ill at ease, as if he did not feel entirely comfortable at the table with his betters. But I wanted him there, so this did not matter to me. I knew why they had brought him. He was a pillar of Bella Valton. "Good day, my beloved guests," I said. "Please do forgive us for keeping you waiting. But it was imperative that we know our own minds on the matters that are so important to us all. We want to give you our decision." There were nods and whispers, but clearly they were all in a torment of suspense. "My queen will speak for us both."
"Thank you, my lord," Beauty said softly.
She was incomparably lovely in her rose-colored gown with gold embroidery, and her hair was exquisitely coiffed beneath a sheer loose white veil. She flashed her most agreeable smile at me and then turned to the little assembly.
"It is our desire to accept your gracious offer," she said. "But wait, you must hear us out, for we would bring about several key changes to the way of things. And it seems meet to warn you of what those changes would be. For now is the time for you to protest what we mean to say. Once we are crowned as your monarchs, there will be no arguing with improvements to the kingdom of Bella Valton that we mean to carry out. By all means, do tell us, said Lady Eva. I speak with the authority given me by the Grand Duke. How polished and confident she seemed for one so young. But there was a simplicity to her that was beguiling, and neither Alexei or Tristan challenged her in any way. Tristan actually smiled at her lovingly, as though her beauty delighted him, and Alexei was studying beauty and studying me. Beauty continued. It is my wish that slavery in the kingdom of Belavaltin should henceforth be voluntary, and that no tribute or trophy slaves should ever be demanded from its allies. And furthermore, that all those slaves who want to leave the kingdom at our accession to the throne be allowed to do so with the appropriate rewards. No one spoke. In fact, all seemed astonished. Beauty went right on. And furthermore, it is our desire to solicit throughout the world for ripe and beautiful and willing slaves, both male and female, to enter servitude in our kingdom, not only from the ranks of royal and noble families, but from all walks of life, the qualifications for such slaves being physical gifts, vigor, and aptitude, regardless of rank. We would send out our emissaries to publicize our announcement, and to receive applicants whom they would then bring back to Belavaltin to commit to 2 years of complete erotic servitude, and some perhaps for longer if they so wished, and we so wished. A smile was playing on Eva's lips, and I saw Alexei's eyes suddenly crinkle with good humor, and Tristan actually sat back with an audible sigh and smiled. Lady Elvira evinced no response whatsoever, and Captain Gordon seemed frankly amazed. Imagine it, if you will, my lords and ladies, said Beauty. We are talking now of a call to all the realms of the north, the south, the east, and the west, for those who long for the sweet fetters we offer them in Belavaltin, and no qualified postulant would be turned away. Of course, the royal houses may continue to send their princes and princesses for service, but the slaves themselves must consent to it, want to please. Now you have told us of many who have returned to the court, like you, Prince Alexei, and you, Prince Tristan. Well, surely there are enough of you to undertake journeys abroad to all points of the compass to publish our appeal, and to review and receive those likely to please and bring them back to our gates. And no doubt, as word spreads of a new era of naked slavery in Belavaltin, applicants will come on foot and on horseback and by coach in the hope of being received by us. Genius, said Tristan suddenly. Of course, you will have more applicants than you can conceivably imagine. I agree, said Beauty quickly. And each and all shall be subjected to 6 months of probation. Past that, and one may commit to 2 years irrevocably. Perfect, Tristan responded. Alexei's smile was more coy and secretive. Lady Elvira looked aloof and unconvinced. And again, said Beauty, if a fair face and form and breeding and aptitude shine in an applicant, no matter how humble, he or she will not be turned away. She drew herself up and continued, her voice quite soft for all its obvious confidence. Now it is our belief that many slaves presently serving in Belavaltin will choose to remain, she said. What say you all to that? Absolutely, said Lady Eva. Without question. Prince Alexei nodded, and so did Tristan. The captain murmured assent under his breath. For the first time, Lady Elvira smiled, but her face was as cold as ever. Yes, they will no doubt very much want to stay. Rare it was, and still is, that any slave actually wants to leave at the end of his or her servitude. And we shall have time to perfect the rules of the kingdom, said Beauty, now greatly encouraged, to refine all before the onrush of those who would come of their own free will. She went on, her words running rapidly. It is our wish that slaves from now on serve in many capacities in the court and in the queen's village, with greater care given to the aptitude of each slave for types of service, so that some may, from the first day, be trained as ponies, and others for work in the fields, and still others for entertainment of the court. In sum, we want greater care in placing slaves where they will flourish and most fully amuse their masters and mistresses, rather than old and tired structures that tempted slaves to play games on their handlers to achieve their ends. Yes, said Lady Eva, this is brilliant. Slaves are like flowers, some wanting sun and some shade, and some the mists from the nearby fountains, and others the dry soil beside the garden path.
Precisely, said Prince Alexei. Then some would serve at once in the Queen's village, you're saying? Asked Captain Gordon. Not because they had disgraced themselves at the castle, but because it was the best place for them.
Indeed, yes, said Beauty. Discipline would be as harsh and as thorough as ever, but the placement would be done with greater care, as Lady Eva has just so well explained. But slaves wouldn't be allowed to choose, said Lady Elvira sharply. Oh, no, never, of course not, said Beauty quickly. But we would take infinitely greater patience in choosing what is best for them.
Ponies, said Captain Gordon. Would you open stables at the castle for men and women ponies, so that the court might enjoy them as the villagers have all these years?
Oh, yes, most definitely, said Beauty. The spectacle of ponies, both male and female, is too splendid not to be used throughout the kingdom.
But wait, my love, I said. Surely you're referring to men only with this, aren't you? I did once in my time in the village see female ponies, but only once, and they were exceedingly rare.
They were rare, true, sire, said Tristan. But they were capable and beautiful, believe me. No, we didn't see them much. The mayor kept a stable when we were in the village. But in fact, Lady Julia, the present mayor of the village, has kept a large stable of female ponies for years.
Beloved, it seems too harsh for women, I said. I can't imagine it. No. I know what it means to have served as a pony, pulling carts, chariots. It's too much.
Your Majesty, believe me, it is not, said Lady Eva without hesitation. Do trust me in this. There are princesses now residing in the kingdom who can tell you happily of their voluptuous service as ponies in Lady Julia's village stable. And they would be overjoyed, I'm sure, to help create a huge stable of female ponies at the castle for Queen Beauty's coaches and her pleasure. Why, Queen Beauty could have her stable of elegant female ponies, and you, sire, might have your stable of well-muscled male ponies. You need never, either of you, or anyone for that matter, travel the roads of the kingdom without human ponies.
Captain Gordon nodded at once. This can easily be accomplished, Your Majesty, he said. You remember Princesses Rosalind and Olenna, who served with you in the land of the Sultan. They were not returned to the kingdom until years after you had left, but they were sentenced to pony servitude by Queen Eleanor to cleanse away all the softening effects of the Sultan's regime. And they served as ponies under Sonia, the head groom appointed by the Lord Mayor of the village in those days. Sonia was the greatest of all grooms of female ponies. Why, Sonia perfected the whole manner of outfitting and handling female ponies. He stopped. His face darkened. He seemed to be remembering himself. Alas, Sonia is long gone. He glanced quickly and fearfully at Prince Alexei, but when Prince Alexei merely smiled, he continued, And those princesses have long been ladies-in-waiting. They can tell you about their service. They speak of it all the time. Thank you, Captain, I said. And do not be ashamed of speaking out here. This is what we must know. I'm finding it hard to imagine delicate lady ponies, but I shall wait and see, of course. And I suspect you are right in this. Your Majesty, said Captain Gordon, there are ponies in Lady Julia's small village stable now.
Yes, we must see these female ponies, said Beauty. We will, of course, be learning much from what we see firsthand, but I think this is a splendid idea.
I shrugged and looked at Beauty. If you say so, all of you.
My lord, said Beauty, this will be like all else, a matter of aptitude. That will be the very nature of our refinements. We shall choose those who will thrive as ponies. And yes, I can well imagine a splendid stable of male and female ponies, and my own personal royal coach being pulled always by a great team of female ponies.
And wait till you hear, your majesties, said Tristan, how Princess Lucinda, another former pony, speaks of the splendid gold harnesses, buckles, boots, and plumes in Sonia's time. Why shouldn't there be such lovely stables at the castle? Why, the court often asked Queen Eleanor for this, but she had no interest in it.
I always thought the pony life mysteriously seductive, said Prince Alexei. But then I never knew it, and seldom even caught a glimpse of it. It was almost painful at times, hearing of it, and not being able to see it. So what do I know?
Oh, poor little good boy, said Lady Elvira, in a withering, mocking voice, that you were never given the pleasure of being humiliated in the village.
Tristan laughed and smiled at Alexei in a confidential way. I couldn't stop myself from laughing.
Well, one can't have everything in life, can one?
Said Alexei as he winked at Lady Elvira. The enthusiasm was running high all around. Lady Elvira was melting, her eyes dancing as she looked from Alexei to Tristan and then to me.
Ponies for the court, she mused. Yes, I do like it. And male and female, yes, quite interesting. But only if it pleases your majesty.
I've certainly heard Princess Lucinda on this, said Lady Eva, and I think she could draw up rules and pictures of accoutrements for a royal stable of female ponies on her own. Why, with the wealth of the court, who knows what might be devised?
Beauty began to laugh, though she tried not to, her hand coming quickly to her lips.
This is perfect, she said.
Very well, I said. I knew I was blushing.
Female ponies.
It was a tantalizing thought. And I well remembered that one glimpse I'd had of the females pulling the mayor's coach. If you wish. And this will be done in the new spirit, with keen attention to those who flourish in such servitude.
Of course, said Beauty. That's the whole point, the new spirit.
But this Sonia, I said, looking at Captain Gordon, you said she was the greatest of all grooms of female ponies. What has become of her? Is it conceivable she might return to the kingdom if we offered her inducements? Again, I saw that shadow cross his face.
Alas, she was dismissed in disgrace, he said. It's a sad tale.
He glanced uneasily at Prince Alexei.
Yes, disgrace, said Prince Alexei. As I was dismissed. It was a complicated affair. It involved Lexius.
You remember Lexius, my lord, I'm sure. Lexius of the Sultanate. But I think Sonia is quite beyond recalling at this point.
I should like to hear all about this, I said. Of course I remember Lexius. It was I who stole him away from the Sultanate. I tried not to laugh. It was perfectly outrageous of me to force Lexius to come with us when we were being rescued by the captain and others. I glanced at the captain. But of course Lexius could easily have gotten away, had he wanted to. Where is Lexius now? What is his story?
But not now, certainly, said Beauty. When we have so very much to discuss, we were speaking of a new spirit.
In time, sire, I will tell you all I know of what happened, said Tristan, of all that was written by Nicholas in the Queen's Chronicles. And I can write to Lexius, if that is your wish.
I have already written, said Alexei. I wrote to him before we left Bellevolton.
That's good, very good, I said. I want to know all about what happened with Lexius.
Is there any chance Lexius might return?
There's a possibility, said Alexei. But Lexius is far away in the land of his birth, and it'll take some time for our letters to reach him. I could see that Lady Eva and Lady Elvira were both fascinated. So was the captain, as the matter of Alexei writing to Lexius had surprised him. I had to know more of all of this.
But come now, said Beauty, to the discussion of the new spirit.
Any good mistress or master, said Lady Eva, can play a good slave like a harp. Yes, and it is my wish, said Beauty, that there be slaves of different ages. In the past, most were very young, and with reason. But now and then the kingdom might receive older slaves whose gifts rival those of the young ones, and whose stamina is undiminished, and whose will to serve burns bright.
Ah, yes, said Prince Alexei with a long sigh. Captain Gordon nodded approvingly. There are some male ponies in the village now who are older, he said. There are some so accustomed to that life that they don't welcome any other. This doesn't surprise me, I said, though I had to confess I didn't remember any older ponies. On the other hand, there had been some very rough ponies in those days, indeed, and I never really saw all of the others, only those who were in our teams, or near us in the stalls, or took their recreation when we did. I caught Lady Eva gazing at me with girlish admiration. I smiled so broadly I forced her to smile against her will. She gave me a mock reproving look as if to say, "You're a bad boy." "And your majesties," she said, quickly recovering her usual remarkable composure, "may I present you with many innovations of my own, which I have developed since I came to the kingdom? Why, I have developed many potions, potions that can aid the most shy slaves to express their passion, and other potions to force sleep and rest at the appropriate times. And of course there are pastes and plasters for decorating slaves that I've developed that might well enhance female ponies, and the old tantalizing potions used to punish. Why, I have a great alchemist, Matthew, working with me in the kingdom, and much can be done now that couldn't be done in the past, because our late queen had no interest, but only if you would allow." "We would allow," said Beauty. "Indeed, this sounds most interesting, and precisely the kind of initiative we wish to encourage." She glanced at me brightly. "Now, one thing further," she said, turning to the group again, "that I should make clear. If many applicants come to us and are found worthy, we can greatly expand the use of slaves for different kinds of labor throughout the realm, with great incentives offered to slaves to work their way up the ladder of servitude from the most menial to the finer forms." "Yes, this makes perfect sense," said Tristan. "As of now, after so many years of gradual decline, the kingdom contains only one very large village, and that is the Queen's village. The small hamlets scattered throughout the forest, and the few manor houses, except for mine, have had no slaves in years." "There was a time when they did," said Alexei. "I remember noble slaves coming to court to serve in those manor houses when I came. They were sons and daughters of lesser families." "I remember talk of that," said Tristan. "I never saw them. But Nicholas told me years ago that there were no more noble slaves, only royal slaves. The kingdom had declined. It was declining up to the day we left it to come here. But surely with a new birth, many will return to the kingdom, and the manor houses and the little hamlets will take on a new life. But all citizens of the realm will treat all slaves with great care," I said firmly. "In my time there, slaves were well cared for, massaged, oiled, pampered, and well fed. And it did seem as if the roughest louts in the village knew the rules. No burning, no cutting, no breaking of the skin." "Oh, most certainly," said Captain Gordon. "It is the same now. All slaves protected. All slaves are bathed, oiled, and massaged carefully, regardless of however lowly they might be. And we would be very vigilant with new citizens as to the rules. Slaves are costly. Slaves are precious." He was working himself up into a lather. I had apparently offended him. "Even of late, slaves are pampered and protected from neglect." "I'm glad to hear it," I said. "And great care will be taken, of course, that all guests know the rules."
"Oh, most certainly, sire," said Tristan. "I never really knew when I was a slave how many guests did visit the kingdom simply to enjoy the slaves."
"There have always been hundreds in residence," said Lady Elvira. She regarded me with her usual cold stare, but her voice had an easy warmth to it, and her words came slowly and evenly. "And at times, long ago, there were even thousands of guests
for special festivals.
But then the queen grew weary, as we all know.
And with a new and vital era beginning, said Tristan, we will need our beautifully trained grooms and squires everywhere, always keeping watch upon the kingdom's treasure, its slaves.
We will need more grooms and squires, said Beauty, and I am sure they will come.
There are rooms in the castle in the north and east towers, said Lady Eva, that have never been used. There is an entire wing of the castle that has been neglected. There must be 50 different rooms there, all waiting to be restored. And then Lord Gregory has the east tower all to himself. There are many rooms above his.
Indeed, there are manor houses that are now deserted, said Lady Elvira.
I have always lived at court, but there are lords and ladies who would pay handsomely for an abandoned manor house, which they might lovingly restore to the grandeur of the past, if they could keep their own slaves.
And why not? Asked Beauty.
Oh, this is splendid. There is so much to be done, proclamations to be written, lists of rules to be drawn up, new buildings that must be designed.
Yes, Your Majesty, it is all too astonishing, cried Lady Eva.
I will do anything and everything that I might to see your dreams realized.
Well then, I said, you have our acceptance of your offer, and you have the main thrust of the changes we would make.
Prince Alexei rose to his feet.
Your Majesties, I salute you both.
He appeared on the verge of tears. It didn't seem to me he'd been half so beautiful when he was younger, or perhaps my tastes had changed. He was a man of stunning face and form now, delicate, yes, like something made of dark glass that might break. But I liked him. Of course, I did not think of him now as I'd found him last night in my wife's bed, in my bed, and naked and childlike as he had hurried to get